through faith and by faith, Hebrews 11, looking at the achievements of faith from the perspective of persuasion and credence. Part 5, Sarah, by Randy Pritz, part of the So Great Salvation series. Today's text, through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in the multitude, and as the sand by which the seashore innumerable. Through faith also Sarah. Verse 11. We continue along in the author's attempt to build up his babe in the word of faith, messianic converts. His call to draw near, hold fast, not waver, not trodden underfoot the glorious grace found in our Lord Jesus, while under this trial of faith and persecution, rings true and clear and is well supported by each previous good report listed in this hall of faith. To turn faith and go back to the covenant they were once under is to go back under the shadows and types and precursors and the explanatory legalisms and temporal atonements that have little but symbolic effect upon the heart of the soul and mind. To turn back is to go back to the conditional system of faith dependent upon their obedience, which they can't keep. For double measure, temporal blessing, or a double measure, temporal curse, that keeps failing God, as evidenced by their near continuous disobedience and captive, dispersed curse. To worship at the temple that the Spirit of God has long since left. Similar could be said of us Gentiles, should we turn back, going back to the self-exalting faiths of a sick, sick world, made-up faiths, all relative, none that stand out from the rest. Simply, we could say to turn back or to cower, to not hold fast, to advance the faith forward, is to move against the faith and proves the lack of substance to support that faith, to short-circuit and cut off that faith before it ever has the chance to receive the promises of the Lord of that faith that he's given to inherit in full. And so today, speaking of promises and how to obtain, we come to the worthy and much needed report of Sarah, promised, quote, a mother of nations, kings of people shall be of her. Genesis 17:16. Her profile and story is a lesson in courageous faith and stands out its own right, apart from Abraham's. She is, after all, her own person. Also really cool to place the two faiths back together as one faith, and the life they shared together, drawing towards God and to each other, obtaining the greater promise of faith as one couple, bone of bone, flesh of flesh. Herself received strength to conceive seed. Verse 11. God works on us as a nation, as a people, as a group. God works on us as couples. God works on us as completely separate individuals. Each facet of his work upon us is very important. To that fact, we must add that God doesn't perform these works at the snap of a finger. It's always a slow, methodical process. From the time conception was promised to the time conception was received, there's a process being placed on Sarah of about 25 years. Sarah was already past her childbearing years. It would have been miraculous, day one, when the promise was given. But yet, it was not the miracle God was late working on. It was Sarah and Sarah's faith that took God all of this time. Through faith, also Sarah received strength to conceive seed. There's a lot of people in this modern age that would easily misinterpret this. It is not faith producing the conception. Faith cannot physically produce the ability for a 90-year-old woman to conceive and bear. It is God that produces the power and ability. Faith only receives it. Picture this as the difference between a group of women over there trying to believe themselves and believe one another more and more, hard, till they're blue in the faith, hard as they can, into bearing children. And then now there's a single woman over yonder placing all her heart and trust upon God and God's miraculous power. And it's not only for the physical change to open up the womb. It is the strength and the courage and the mental and physical fortitude of a 90-year-old woman to make it 9 months as only a 20-year-old woman probably should. And then to parent a child her remaining years. That's the real trick. That's the real strength being spoken of here. So why did it take God 20-some years to make this change and build this strength? To tell you the truth, given the task at hand and knowing my own faith and heart, I'm surprised it only took 20 years. It's taken me 45 years to go half as far. It could also be said that maybe she had to wait now and then for her husband's faith, here and there, to catch up to hers. At times, just as he at times had to wait for her faith to catch up with his. Because she judged him faithful who had promised. You recall that it wasn't Abram that had heard God's voice. When the promise was made the first time, she overheard it. From over by the tent, the Lord and Abraham could hear a pleasant squeak of a giggle. I doubt that it was a snort of a laugh. That only seems to happen at me at inopportune moments. It's not a giggle of disbelief, mind you. It's more like a tickle. The momentary escape in one's mind to the allowance of there being the slightest possibility. Maybe that's the moment, that moment could be pointed to as the birth of her faith in God's promise. That quick little glimpse of even a remote possibility. And from there, the imagination then can begin to wonder what the possibility of having a child in your arms would look like. She hadn't allowed herself that hope for quite some time, I would imagine, and now the hope of it is inside of her and growing. This being the Lord, is there anything too hard for the Lord? It's not me, Sarah speaking here. It's not me that came up with this. No, the Lord just now promised it to my husband without batting an eye, just as if it were the surest thing ever to happen. Now faith is beginning to get Sarah somewhere because she judged him faithful who had promised. Let me read that again. Because she judged him faithful who had promised. In the Hebrew, her name Sarai, my princess, is being changed to Sarah, princess of all. But the faith building required for this princess and for her faith, for her heart, it's just starting and is nowhere near yet completed. Let's tap out for a moment here and get ourselves reoriented with the author's surroundings. What would this have to do with these timid and fearful converts? Is it saying that they can do anything for God if they only believe strong enough in it? No. It's saying God can do anything that he has promised to them if they are willing to undergo his faith-building and strengthening process. It is the Lord being faithful to keep his promise. Us being faithful to God by undergoing the process that leads to the eventual fulfillment promised. The birth of which might begin as a glimmer of hope, but methodically proceeds to a much more substantive faith that actively engages with the here and now, no matter what that here and now may appear to us to be. What this promise means to these converts and to us is that the hope in a promise is only the beginning of a long journey, one step at a time through a now completely foreign land, and that you are now a pilgrim. There might be those of you here with Sarah at this beginning stage. There might be those of you that have moved along with her to the Hebron stage or at Mamre. Fewer still will be there with her in Egypt right now. Every stage that you go through has obstacles and challenges, both individually and together as a couple. Each place meant to stretch you beyond your present strength a little further and further. And this is nothing new. It has happened saint after saint, as we're beginning to find out reading through this chapter. You don't back off now just because a person or two or a town or a nation give you a bit of confrontation. And as we will soon find out, just like Sarah, we will each make crucial mistakes along the way. Corrections to the way we plan and think will have to be made. But then, and only then, will come the fulfillment of God's promise as hoped. Until then, a slow, steady path towards the evidence of things hoped for. Therefore, sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead. Verse 12. The promise made to Sarah and Abraham eventually was fulfilled, and there were as many children born through them as there are stars in the sky. How they got to that, though, is the story of faith that we really should be told. Clearly, it is not just the faith of an old woman wanting to have a child at her breasts and in her arms. That is only the hope that got her faith in God ignited. It is the growing of her faith through thick and thin, walking hand in hand with her man of faith through a bloody and sinful and weary land, pulling up stakes to their mobile canvas household several times. Her husband called far off to fight against tribal lord kings to rescue his kin. A time or two of him chasing after the Lord, pleading, if for 40 righteous be found, if for 20, if 10. A time of fighting off the unwanted marital advances of a hostile king because of the cowardly request of her soulmate to not make his marriage to her known. Perhaps to us she is best known for acquiesce, handing her maidservant over to the ill-thought-out, self-manufactured plan of birthing God's promised child for him. Then for rage, having to send the maidservant off. Then bring her back with child. then sending both out one final time. Easy on the eyes it is for us to read through this 13-year portion of her life and judge her feelings, judge her thoughts. But hard for us to read through unwritten years of tears and pain laying underneath, hoping to one day bless her man with a nascent son, but not having happened yet. The blame that she places squarely upon herself, perhaps. This is what she had convinced herself in her lowest state would be right, and she acted upon that as any one of us would do, and have done, and even are doing now to this very day. Perhaps she felt the need to sacrifice of her own self and her own womanly pride to get this done for her 10-year elder husband. Perhaps she thought herself at odds with God, and that's why he was holding back, that's why he was unwilling still to do this through her. Maybe he had changed his mind. Now it's up to Hagar. You know how the mind plays its tricks. I've heard it said that she was being impatient, then became jealous, then just plain bitter. I choose to look at her in a more beneficial way, that corrections to our course are always being made. That is often our best intended mistakes in love and life that force upon us the highest quality of faith improvement. The object here is neither to blame nor excuse her for what she had done, just as it is not to blame nor excuse Abraham for going along with it. They both did as seemed right at the time in their own eyes. The thing that we best get into our minds is that It was God being faithful, even when they were not so much. It's easy for us to get the raw feelings, the instinct at hand, the things that we think are that a smarter person than us would do, all twisted up into a wad of string, knotted and crimped tight. Confuse it with the plan and purposes of God and take a running dive into this the depths of it. Part of the process involved that strengthens us is the cessation of our own tied-up effort long enough to get our bearings straight and follow God back out of it, to get back on our course. No saint is above this. If not for the faithfulness of God, we would all be caged up like rubber cores surrounded by a mile of string, encased in cowhide, stitched together by gut thread, thrown at the batter's bat and sent off to the third deck, where never again to be seen. Instead, at least in this case, the faithfulness of God led this tremendous husband and tremendous wife, both individually and as a team, and soon as a people, to some tremendous and substantively faithful things. Might it so lead us, pray God.